Welcome to episode number 5 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about tissues of the abdomen, packing part 2, and how your skin works.
How's it going?
Not too shabby. Got exams coming up again next week.
Again?
Already.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, like they go pretty hard here. I mean, it is a it's a shortened course.
That's true.
Like it's an accelerated program, so.
It goes really fast.
Yeah. All right, so today we're going to talk about tissues of the abdomen, which might sound really boring.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
but like, it's kind of actually, like, awesome. The way that, I mean, everything in your body has a purpose, and it has to be all connected for some reason, right?
Well, duh, yeah.
I mean, that's
the head bone's connected to the neck bone.
Truth. Okay, so inside of your body, like, you have all of your, like, you can picture your abdomen with, like, your stomach.
Actually, yeah, give me just a quick and dirty of what is included in my abdomen.
Okay, so, I'll just run through the quadrants real quick, nothing too big deal, but imagine a line splitting your abdomen in half.
Sure.
Both ways.
Like, if I had a six-pack?
Kind of, but, like, no, we're doing it more at the belly button.
Oh, okay.
Not so much at the belly button. Well, kind of at the belly button. Anyway, but, so it's splitting your abdomen into, like, four quadrants, right?
Okay.
Okay, so your left upper quadrant will have your stomach and your spleen, and your stomach on the right-hand side, like, opposite of your stomach is your liver. And then your stomach feeds into your duodenum, which is the first part of your small intestine.
I was like,
your duodenum is the first part of your small intestine. And then there's a pancreas that's kind of behind the stomach, but like below the stomach, in that general area. That attaches to your small intestine. And then that small intestine duodenum goes over, and then that's your jejunum. So we're back on the left-hand side, and then it, like, does all that weird wrapping stuff.
Do my kidneys count?
Your kidneys kind of count, kind of don't count. And we're actually going to kind of talk about that because they exist in your abdomen, but in a whole different part of your abdomen than the rest of your...
Does my uterus count?
No. Your uterus is in your pelvis.
So my pelvis, or my pelvis, my uterus and my, like, bladder don't count.
No, not for what we're talking about.
Okay, cool.
So then jejunum and then ileum, and then, so those are your small intestines, and they attach to your big intestine, your large intestine, and that's in your lower right, and it goes up, that's the ascending, it goes across, that's the transverse, and we're actually back to the level of the stomach at that point, and then it goes back down.
Descending.
Yep. And then it has to, so we're on the left-hand side, and it has to go back into the middle, that's your sigmoid, and where it attaches to your colon and your rectum.
All right.
So that's a real, real quick rundown. But so all those things don't just, like, they don't just sit in your abdomen, because then they would all, like, slide down and be compressed at the bottom, right?
I suppose you're right.
Yeah, so somehow it has to, like,
hold its shape.
Yeah. So
there's not a lot of bones up in there.
No, there's very few bones, actually. But there is a lining that goes all the way around it, like a sac.
Oh, like if I was, like, cleaning a deer, the gut sac of a deer?
Yeah. So on the
not that I've ever actually done this.
Right. But so there's a sac that goes all the way around it, and it has two layers, kind of like we didn't talk about this on air, but kind of like how there's a sac that goes, oh, like the bursa. We didn't talk about that. Remember the bursa that goes around the synovial capsule of your joint?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so it was a two-layered sort of thing. It had an inside layer and an
outside layer.
Yeah, that's the same as this.
Okay.
So we got the two-layer like that. And the reason it's two layers is that allows it to kind of move around.
Squishy squish.
Yeah, well, it's more like, think of it like friction. You want those things, those linings, to be able to slide against each other, because if everything is too hard attached, it can transfer the force more. Like if you get punched in the stomach.
Or okay. Yeah.
Whatever. So that like sac is called the peritoneum. And the outside is called the parietal peritoneum. Inside is visceral peritoneum. Visceral is probably a pretty familiar word for most people.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's kind of crazy about this peritoneum is it. We use the word invaginate. It invaginates or goes between the organs to help suspend everything. I knew you were going to get stuck on that word. So it's all kind of one type of tissue, but when it connects organs to each other, we call it an omentum. When it connects organs to, like, the wall, the anterior wall or the posterior wall, so, like, the front of your abdomen or the back of your abdomen, then we call it a mesentery. So it sort of splits up the abdomen into some different sections. The intraperitoneal viscera, so that... that it suspends things from the abdominal wall by mesenteries. So, let me re-stab at that one. That's why I stumbled, because I knew that that wasn't going to really make sense. So let's just say that there's mesenteries that suspend things like the stomach from the abdominal wall, and we call it an
like clothes falling down from a clothesline.
Yeah, similar to that. Yeah, it's kind of... But the thing is, like, the stomach has multiple things that it's attached to.
Okay, so, sure. So it's like... Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's almost a little bit more like hanging on a Christmas tree. Because there's more things to keep it up, you know?
Sure.
So there's retroperitoneal organs, which are... So there's one big sac in the middle that's all the peritoneum, right?
Okay.
And things that only exist in that sac we call intraperitoneal because they're only in that peritoneum. But there's things that, like, okay, because you were asking about your kidneys, that's why I'm saying it. If it's behind that sac, that big sac, it's called retroperitoneal. So your kidneys actually sit.
They're not in your gut sac.
No, they're in their own sac. And then there's some that actually kind of go into both and get suspended in between in a way. And those are like parts of large intestine and small intestine, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
And then what gets even more complex about this is that there's also different pockets that happen.
Oh, so like when I pack a suitcase and I put everything in its own bags in the suitcase?
Yeah, very, very much in a way. Or if you think of it, so yesterday when I hung your shirt from the clothesline, it blew, and then the back half was like hanging on the line behind it.
Yeah.
So it was hanging between the two of them. Well, in that middle of that shirt, you could have placed something. That's like a little open area. That's the kind of pocket that we're talking about. And they're kind of important to know about because when things go wrong, fluid collects there.
Sure.
So if your appendix bursts and you start leaking fluid out, that's got to go somewhere.
It's got to go somewhere.
And it's going to go into one of these pockets. So, for instance, there's the omental foramen. So foramen is, like we've talked about, a hole or an opening.
Right. Like thank you heart. For the reminder, though.
There's omental foramen that leads to the omental bursa, which is also known as the lesser sac. But that's basically all that room behind your stomach. There's a whole pocket right there. So if your stomach leaks... gastric juices or anything, it's all going to collect right there. There's other structures that surround it, so we call those boundaries. I mean, there's, to give you kind of an idea of like where it's at, it's behind the stomach, it's behind like the middle lobe of the liver and the ligament that connects the stomach to the colon, but it's in front of like your pancreas and your kidney, let's see, the opening is on the right, that's omental foramen, and then underneath is the transverse colon. But anyway, the point is that's called the lesser sac, and we call the rest of the peritoneal the greater sac. The greater sac is all split up in two. There's the greater omentum and the lesser omentum. The greater omentum is a fold, and this is kind of cool. There's a fold that drapes down from your transverse colon, so the part of your small or large intestine that goes across.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's this mesentery or omentum that's hung on it. It drapes all the way down over your jejunum and ileum, which are the last two parts of your small intestine, right? So all of that, like, mid-gut area has a big sac hanging over it.
Hanging over it?
Just hanging over it.
Why?
That's a good question. Like, I'm describing a lot of different places where this stuff is, but why have it at all? So we talked about how it's important for it to
collect juice if you've got a juice leak.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really want to. I guess you could argue that it keeps it from getting onto the organs,
right?
As a future,
like, well, like it, like, doesn't it, like, contain, like, if your appendix bursts and it's starting to, like, leak fluid and stuff, that it kind of keeps it contained in one area instead of, like, swooshing over to your liver.
Yeah, like, I know what you're trying to say. Yes.
Cool.
It does. That's not, like necessarily the reason we have it, because the reason we have it is actually kind of crazier than that.
What is it?
So, yes, it does that. We talked about how, like, structurally it helps as far as keeping everything in place. There's a lot of important, like, arteries and veins and stuff that go through them, too. But when one part of your bowel is inflamed, for instance, so if you get, like, an infection in your ascending colon.
Okay.
Okay. That tissue will actually move, and it's going to surround it and help contain that infection and that inflammation.
What?
Yeah.
Like, all I'm thinking of is, like, wildfires and how they'll, like, cut down trees and stuff around where a wildfire is.
Yeah, but it's almost more like throwing a blanket on the fire.
Yeah.
So, and your body just does this naturally. It'll help contain that infection. Now, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, because it's very hard for your mesentery or any of these, like, tissues to get infected. But once they do, It's really a big deal.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, it's hard for the infection to get in, but once it's in, it can travel very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it connects.
Yeah,
because
it's got
everything.
A highway.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah,
a curvy highway,
a very wavy, curvy highway.
Yeah, like the Vincentian highways.
Yeah.
Are you liking what you're hearing? Coming very soon, we will be launching our Patreon account, where you will get special access to more of what you're getting here.
Hey, Micah. So, we already did one section on what to pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were some really helpful things, so please check that episode.
I'd like to think they were helpful.
I like to think so, obviously. But this is kind of a continuation of that one. This is part two. Mostly talking about some of the things that we packed that we definitely haven't used.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got a handful of really good things that we decided to pack that we've used a lot, and then some things that... No. Keeping pile of wasted space.
I'm pretty sure I know what a few of those things are already.
What do you think?
Did you put on there the camping gear?
Yeah.
That's so disappointing.
It's really disappointing. So, Micah and I like to camp a lot. We actually camped on our honeymoon and all of that.
Yep.
And we were really excited about doing some beach camping, because I did a lot of beach camping in Hawaii when I lived there. And it's really fun. You wake up and you're on the ocean. Come on.
Yeah.
So we couldn't really find much about camping on the island, but we didn't see anything saying that there is no camping on the island.
You know, I seem to feel like we found that there was camping up in, like, the mountains and stuff, too.
You know what? I think you're right, actually, now that you say that. That you're allowed to camp by the volcano.
Yeah.
And from everything that we've heard since being here talking to people, don't do it.
No.
That it's an unsafe place to be.
Yeah. Like, real unsafe.
Yeah. So, And you know, you can feel free to message us and we'll tell you all about it.
Yep.
But, so that being said, finding that there's no campsites or places organized for camping. So
no, and camping doesn't seem to be something that anybody does here either.
Right.
Like, even when we talk to local friends and we say we want to go camping, I don't know that many of them have even ever been.
Yeah. That they're kind of like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why would you want to sleep in a tent?
Yeah.
When you've got a house.
And I haven't seen a park open past 10, like even kind of a city park type deal.
Yeah. So all the parks are closed at about 10 o'clock. Some of them do close at sundown.
Yeah.
So there's no place to camp. And so, but we packed our tent and our sleeping pads, and that took up a ton of space.
Yeah, that did. So, we even brought some of, not like camping cooking stuff, but like some of our camp accessories that we think are important to have along.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know how to, like it's a...
It's a cup pot, that has, yeah, it's a pot that has some insulated cups in it.
Yeah. Which is kind of awesome to have when you're camping.
Yeah, it's super awesome to have when you're camping.
Especially for coffee.
Coffee. So, unfortunately, if you're a camper, packing any camping stuff isn't really going to be worth it here on the island. There's also, you were informed to pack a lot of school supplies, weren't you?
Yeah. People told me... Pretty much bring, people told me to bring everything that you possibly can. And then one of the things that I heard over and over was bring all of your school supplies, like all your pens, all your paper, plan on bringing all of that.
And now, what do you think?
I guess I'm not a picky school supply kind of person.
Like, you don't need your perfect pen?
No, I don't. As long, like, actually the pens I like are usually cheap, you know?
Yeah, because then you don't feel so bad if you lose them.
Yeah, which I usually do. Yeah. I don't feel like the school supplies on island are any more expensive.
No.
Not egregiously so. And so I have, like, a ton of pens and pencils, and I also have a ton of notebooks, and I'm just not really going through paper. Because pretty much everything I'm doing is digital, especially since I have digital textbooks. I think there's something about like just making my textbooks digital that made me tend to live in that like
in that era, that,
yeah, that world
mindset.
Or whatever. Yeah.
And I also remember at some point somebody saying every time my mom and it wasn't
It was something on a forum.
Yeah, that my mom is always sending me reams of paper.
Yeah, it was like every time she comes to visit, she would bring like four or five or something. I mean, yeah. Something just ridiculous.
And that's, we don't even have a printer.
No.
So I don't
know. I mean, I brought like some 3-ring binders because when I was going to school in the States, I used 3-ring binders a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But also just the structure of classes are very much different. Like I'm not getting handouts. I'm not getting assignments. I'm not getting things that I need to keep track of. I don't have the ability, nor even if we were back home, I probably wouldn't print all of the PowerPoints I'm getting because that would be a tremendous amount.
Yeah. Printing is expensive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's here, just like back in the U.S., if you print at school or whatever, it's 10 cents a page.
Yeah.
And then to print it all at home, you'd be going through ink like crazy.
Crazy, yeah. So, yeah, well, I mean, there's access to just fine, decent school supplies.
I would say out of all those pens and pencils and stuff that I brought, I will end up using them by the time that we leave.
Sure.
I just wouldn't have needed to bring them all.
Yeah. Cool. And then the last thing that we've packed that we haven't quite seen the use for yet is an external hard drive.
Yeah, just like that was on a lot of packing lists that people brought up was external hard drives. And maybe it's because mine is like a big one, like it's a terabyte or whatever that you have to plug into the wall. And I do see people pass theirs around some, but man, with flash drives as big as they are anymore.
That's true. And so much stuff you can keep on the cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, almost everything I have is on the cloud except for my books.
Yeah. So that's something that we haven't necessarily needed. Now I've got just a handful of things that I think that we overlooked on our first one for things that we should pack.
Oh, yeah.
the snorkel stuff.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that we have that word.
Yeah. And when we talk to different dive shops on the island, that the supplies that they can get are just not very good.
What was that? It was so expensive. That there wasn't a, it was expensive to bring them in, and then there just wasn't a retail market here.
Sure.
And that, you know, they would rent out, they rent out a bunch of stuff for whenever there's a cruise ship or a tour in on island, but for retail, like, they said it's not even worth them keeping it on hand.
Yeah.
I would have expected moving to a Caribbean island that has dive shops that we would have cheaper and better.
Yeah, but not true. So we got really nice stuff when we were in back in the States, and Mike actually even got prescription goggles.
Yeah,
and yeah. So I've been. It was kind of expensive when we first got it, but it's something that we do almost every weekend, and then the cost has already happened.
Yep.
So now it's super cheap to jump in the car and go to a different beach.
Yeah. And having decent gear, I think we've made it much more enjoyable than if we had gotten just
crap.
Crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just good enough.
And so there's a couple other things. Specifically like beach related, that this isn't something that we've used a lot, but I actually really like having it, is our solar powered, water resistant speaker.
We never,
but I love it. I bring it to the beach.
We bring it to the beach every single time and we've broken it out once.
That's because you are a fun hater. So I like having it and I don't care what you say.
It's not that I'm a fun hater.
It's that he doesn't like being on the beach when we're at the beach. He only likes being in the water.
Yeah, I like if I'm going to go to the beach, I want to snorkel. And then we get out and it's like, well, are we going to just rest and go back in or are you done? And you're like, well, I'm done. And like, okay, well, let's go. Like,
yeah, I know. And so he doesn't understand the idea of relaxing at the beach one bit.
I do relax at the beach. It's just not laying on the beach.
Mm. You're going to come back as pasty as you walked here.
No, that's actually not true.
And
I'm already burned.
So anyway, for things that you enjoy that I don't ever get the chance to use, the underwater camera.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, like, I think that's part of why I like snorkeling so much, is having an underwater camera. It gives me, like, something to do while I'm there.
Yeah.
And, like, the first time we went snorkeling, I didn't bring it with. And I totally went diving for trash. I spent like an hour cleaning up the beach.
It's true.
Like underwater. But man, like look at all the stuff that we've gotten pictures of already, like lionfish and, we missed the photo of the octopus cause my camera was screwed up.
I know. I saw an octopus yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That would be one thing. If you bring an underwater camera, make sure you wash it off good, because I think that's what I screwed up, that I didn't wash it well enough.
Because the salt really will mess up anything metal.
Yep. And, you know, a month in, I'm already having to think about getting a new camera if that gets much worse.
Yeah. We also packed 2 bath towels each, as well as a beach towel for both of us.
Yeah.
So we both have 3 towels, and that's really handy. It took up a ton of space in the suitcases, but we used it to wrap around more fragile, delicate stuff that we had.
Some electronics.
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't that bad, but it did take up a lot of space, but it's been really nice to have.
It sounds exorbitant, but, like, we're also here for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we're living here. It's not like we brought 2 towels or 3 towels each to vacation for a week.
Right. Yeah. And on that, something that you just always need to have is a first aid kit. And, you know, stocked with just like all your random stuff, like Benadryl and things that you might not even think to like, oh, I haven't used that in like, you know, 7 months. Why would I need it?
Right.
But you'll probably need it 7 months from now. And that's something, like, you know, you can get over-the-counter medications here easily, but it's the type of thing that adds up pretty quickly.
Yeah. Especially since if you already have it. And I feel like mobility here is a little bit tough. Things aren't open late. So if you get sick at 2 in the morning, you're probably not going to get whatever pain meds or stomach meds or whatever until you hop on a dollar van the next day to drive into town to go to Massey or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, packing a first aid kit has been really great. I also noticed I purchased Band-Aids here this week.
You did?
Yeah.
We have a bunch. We have a first aid kit.
I know, but remember how I locked my thumb in the car? Yeah, and then I went to work and they didn't have Band-Aids there, so I had to go get Band-Aids so I wasn't bleeding on it and everything. Anyway, the Band-Aids I got here sucked.
Oh, really? Quality?
Terrible. They didn't stick. Like, the sticky part was bad.
Were they expensive, too?
There were more money than I wanted to spend on something that didn't work, but they weren't that bad expensive.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's part two of packing for the Caribbean.
This podcast and a bunch of other information can be found on artofmedschool.com. Check back regularly for blog posts as well as worksheets and other materials that can help you in your med school journey.
All right, last on today's list, let's talk about skin.
Skin.
You jumped on that line.
Skin.
Knock, knock.
Interrupting Calmill.
Ah. All right. So, okay. So skin, right?
Like,
the skin is actually...
Your epidermis.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah. But first, function. Like, do you know all the cool stuff your skin does for you?
Waterproofs your body.
Yep.
I'm 100% waterproof.
Thermoregulation.
Yep.
Helps with balancing your electrolytes. It provides sensory information. It's your first line of defense for immune system, but did you know that it also stores extra blood for you?
Wait, why do you have extra blood?
Why do you keep two towels per person, like, in case you need it? But it's also 16% of your body weight.
Oh my gosh, my skin's so fat.
It's your single largest organ.
I did know that it's your largest organ, even though you don't think of it as an organ.
Yeah. And
it's human suit.
It's kind of awesome, like, all the stuff that it has and does for you. And like you said, there's the epidermis.
Yes.
And there's also the dermis. And you might have heard of, like, the hypodermis.
Only when I'm really excited.
What?
Oh, hypo, not hyperdermis.
No, hypo... well, some people talk about the hypodermis. It's not actually part of your skin. It's actually just connective tissue, but epidermis and dermis, right? And there's also all sorts of other stuff. We call them epidermal derivatives, that go along with your skin. So
like your hair follicles and stuff.
Yeah. And like sweat glands and sebaceous glands, your nails, even your mammaries are considered part of your
skin.
Yeah.
Huh?
So collectively, we call this the integumentary system.
Integumentary.
So the layers are the epidermis. That's the superficial layer. That's the part
outside.
That's the part you can see. It comes from ectodermal origin. If you've been following along on the blogs for the embryology stuff, that would mean something to you. Jen does not follow my blogs.
I've got stuff to do.
What's cool, or one of the things that's cool, is the top layer is, well, they're all the skin is stratified squamous.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so yeah. The squamous is the really flat kind of egg-looking cells, and it's keratinized. So I think most people have heard of keratin, at least. But keratin
is... talk about it in beauty products all the time.
Yeah, well, keratin is the protein in your body that helps toughen your skin cells, essentially.
Okay.
It also has melanocytes, which...
Like melanin?
Yep. Langerhans cells, which is a dendritic cell, so it's like an immune cell.
Okay.
They're antigen-presenting, so what they do is when a foreign body starts to invade your skin, it grabs one and then presents it to your immune system so they know, hey, this is
a
bad guy. So they're like a whistleblower.
I actually remember that from, like, school days.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't. Merkel cells are in your epidermis, and Those are kind of cool because, like, if you touch your skin lightly, you can feel it. But if you leave it there...
Oh, yeah, and you just leave your finger there.
You quit feeling it.
Yeah.
And it's helping to basically parse the information that you don't need to process so that...
Oh, sure.
You know, because our brain takes in so much information all at once.
Yeah.
You know? And the other, you know, epidermis, it's constantly regenerated. Every 30 days, a cell... It takes basically 30 days for a cell to make it from the bottom layer to the top layer.
You are a brand new person on the outside once a month?
Essentially.
Except for your hairs.
Right. But if you think about it, if they say all of your cells, essentially, all of your cells that do regenerate, get replaced every 7 years. So if you look at a photo of yourself from more than 7 years ago, it is not physically you. There's not one cell in that person that is the same one. Yeah.
It's just a memory.
Isn't that crazy? Anyway. It also does things like epidermal ridges, which, like all those little lines on your skin.
Oh, sure.
Yep. Those are
I'm getting more and more of those every day. The more often I go outside without sunscreen.
So I'm going to give a little bit on the layers. I know this isn't necessarily for everyone, but for anyone who's listening to this for school, it's important to remember the layers of the epidermis, and they're kind of hard to remember, but I found a really good mnemonic that I like.
Okay.
It's come. Let's get sunburned.
That makes sense.
It does. So there's the basale, spinosum, granulosum, lucidum, and corneum. So corneum.
Oh, you went backwards.
Yeah. Well,
I'm burned, son. Get let's come.
Yes. So come, let's get sunburned would be superficial to deep. I just listed them deep to superficial. Superficially, the corneum is, so there's all these layers of your epidermis, right?
Uh-huh.
There's all these layers of the, do you want me to do that part again?
No.
Okay. I got really excited and brought the microphone too close. So the corneum is the most superficial. That's actually the layer of your epidermis that you're seeing. And it's all those flattened, it's all dead.
Okay.
It's all flattened dead cells that are filled with keratin, and they can just slough off. And the reason that they slough off, that's actually protection from, like, abrasion and stuff like that.
Like my vagina?
Yes, like your vagina. We talked about that.
We talked about this.
The lucidum, which is the next one down, is actually the skin on the palm of your hand and on the soles of your feet is what's called thick skin.
Okay.
And it actually has an extra layer of protection.
Oh.
A whole extra layer of skin cells.
Since living in St. Vincent, though, I've had a lot of people tell me that I've got my hands are too soft and I need to work harder.
I believe that.
Yeah.
So they're basically all dead too. Granulosum is underneath that. So I actually got conflicting information that granulosum may only be present in thick skin as well, but I don't know if that's right. I don't think it is. Anyway, but they're flattened cells. They sometimes consist of membranes for waterproofing. Spinosum has several layers of keratinocytes to start pumping keratin. You know, they're putting keratin in. And they're connected to each other with desmosomes. So did we go over junctions between cells? I don't think we did. That should be one sometime, because that's actually kind of cool, too, all the different ways that cells can connect to each other. Anyway, they have desmosomes so that, you know, they can help you waterproof. The Langerhans that we talked about.
Yes.
That's in this layer.
Yeah.
And then finally, there is the basale, which is the deepest. And all those layers that we listed, none of those cells divide.
Oh.
Yeah. So the basale is the deepest layer that actually is going to connect.
Move up.
Yeah, so they divide, and then they basically their job is to feed cells upwards. And then, so it divides, it makes a cell, it goes up to spinosum, where we have all those keratinocytes, and that, so it's starting to get pumped full of stuff, and then it goes up into the granulosum, where it starts flattening out, and it starts dying, and then it goes up... to like the lucidum if it's there, or to the corneum, depending on which one, and that's when it's dead. So in a way, your skin is growing from the inside out.
Sure. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's a cool concept, the way that there's a whole layer that's dedicated just to replenishing the tissue above it, you know?
So that's the epidermis.
Yep.
And there's then the dermis.
Yes.
Are there more layers there?
No. So the dermis, there's two layers is all. There's a papillary layer, which has ridges in it so that it can be more connected. So there's more, basically anytime that your body has a ridge or anything like that, it's about making more, what would be the word, surface.
Okay, it's more surface area.
Yeah, so, so that way, yeah, that way it has more surface area with the epidermis. It's actually made out of loose connective tissue. And here you have your Meissner corpuscles, which are fine touch receptors. So we had the Merkel cells already, which are a fine touch. This is another type of fine touch. And then underneath that, we have the dermal reticular layer, which is a dense connective tissue. And all this is going to attach to, like, your muscle. Well, actually, it'll attach to, like, a fascia, which attaches to your muscles and that kind of thing. So this is basically connective tissue to keep your skin attached to your body.
So it doesn't just saggy bag.
Right. And if you remember when we talked about connective tissue before, there's a lot of collagen in connective tissue.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome?
No.
So it's a faulty, it's a syndrome, it's genetic, that is a faulty collagen synthesis. It's a breakdown in faulty collagen, or a breakdown in collagen synthesis. So basically, a person with Ehlers-Danlos can't make collagen the same way that, like, you and I can.
So what does that look like?
Well, that
how does that present?
That all connects to connective tissue. Like, collagen is in connective tissue, right? So then their skin becomes hyper-extensible. So you can, like, you can pull their skin away from their body. Yeah. Wow. It isn't quite boyoyoying,
sure.
You know, if you think of, like, a freak show.
A saggy bag. Yeah. Saggy bag skin.
And
sorry for anybody, like, I'm just...
So that's you know, why this, like, connective tissue is important, you know? The dermal reticular layer also has Pacinian corpuscles, which is a type of pressure receptor, so it's deep pressure. It also has something to do with proprioception. Have you ever heard of that? It's an important one for you for your line of work. Proprioception is essentially how your mind knows where your body is without looking at it.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So you have sensors that actually help you,
figure that out.
Yeah.
So you can, like, are those also the ones where it's like, I can feel somebody coming from behind me, even if I can't hear them?
No, that's kind of a different thing. This is just, like, body awareness.
Sure. Yeah, which... Even though I do theater, I am terrible at this.
So what else? Oh, let's talk about, like, some of the sweat glands real quick.
Okay, yeah, because, like, the skin is also the glands.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Not every gland in your body.
No, but there's a ton of skin glands.
Yeah.
So there's eccrine, which are sweat glands. Those sit in your dermis. And what they do is they deliver...
Temperature regulation, straight up.
Yeah. Yeah, because they are delivering sweat to the pores on your surface.
My sweat glands are so well-tuned right now.
Mm-hmm. Stimulated by parasympathetic innervation. There's also apocrine, they're much larger, they're specialized, and they're located in special areas of your body. Where do you think you might have sweat glands different than the rest of your body?
My areola.
You're totally just reading that off the script.
What?
I thought you would say armpit.
Yes, my armpit.
Because, like, you know that your armpit swells different.
Sweat differently, yeah.
Yeah, it smells different. It's like the base of your neck and, yes, your areolas and your pubic region all has this kind of stuff.
Oh, all of your, like, middle school stinky bits.
Yeah, yeah. And it's actually responsive to hormonal influences. So these really kick in, like, middle school.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I think is interesting. The apocrine gland releases by, it pinches a portion of itself off to release, and it's stimulated by sympathetic innervation, right? So it what it does is it releases some of its sweat, essentially. It's sex sweat. And it empties into hair follicles close to, like, the skin. Okay, so then those go up, and but it's actually odorless.
Huh.
Right?
Wait, okay.
You don't think of it as odorless.
No.
Because bacteria in your hair follicles act on these secretions to give them their smell.
That's disgusting.
It is gross. It's also weird because we all have different...
Bacterias.
Different, and so we have different smells. But it's not me that smells like my odorous armpits. It's the bacteria that does it.
It's not you that smells bad. It's my nose that interprets your smell as smelling bad.
You know, you know what I'm saying. Like, that's kind of a crazy idea. That
is wild, yeah.
Yeah, that our bacteria, our normal skin flora differs enough that we can all have distinct smells, you know?
Yeah.
Then last but not least, there's sebaceous. It empties into the neck of the hair of the follicle, so lower than the apocrine. And it's over most of our body, but it's most abundant on, like, the face, your forehead, your scalp. So that's the kind of stuff that, like, releases, it releases sebum. It's a holocrine gland, but it helps maintain, like, the skin barrier, and it, like, shields from, like, UV and that kind of thing a little bit more. Basically, that's why your skin on your face and, like, your scalp is a little bit more soft and supple than rest of your body.
It is true.
Yeah. So that, like, and there's also hair and nails, but that's a whole bunch of other stuff.
Would you call it a hairy situation?
We could.
Okay.
We could.
No, That's fine.
So that's I wanted to talk about the skin and the sweat glands, and that's what we did.
I like it.
Yeah.
Made it by the skin of our teeth.
Our teeth don't have skin.
Shut up.
All right, there you have it for episode 5. That was Tissues of the Abdomen, How to Pack Part 2, as well as Skin. I hope you join us next week for a lot of really cool stuff. Thanks. Urbanimatronica Wuyan Mix by Spinning Mercada is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way with St. James School of Medicine. He just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.